This conference will.
Good. All right. So now we're recording. What we want to do today is we're going to talk about a book review. It's called the book is called Go for No, and it was written by Richard Fenton and Andrea Waltz. And I recognize Gail Hoag for the one that introduced this book to me. And what a terrific book. And it's written in a learning story format. That seems to be something popular these days. You see it with a lot of the books that are coming out, like the Go Giver book and the book by Lifetime of Referrals and things like that. So you're seeing a lot of books being written in that kind of story format. I'm going to see if I can get rid of the clicking one more time on here. Okay. I think we found the clear method of doing that. This book is written the same way. It's kind of a story format, and it starts off with a gentleman. His name is Eric Bratton, and he's a salesman, and he sets a quota in his sales business. I believe he's like leasing copiers right now. That happens to be his current business. Anyway, he sets a goal in his business that he's going to have 4 sales a week, and the book starts out with him being over the charts excited, calling his wife saying, guess what? The good news is I'm still getting that clicking. So he gets all his people to, he calls his wife and he says, honey, here's the great news. The great news is that I already have 3 sales. I had 3 calls today and I made 3 sales. And he was all excited and he was just, you know, so wired. And his wife goes, great, well, maybe we can put more money in the Hawaii fund. And he goes, well, I had some other things in mind for the week, too. So what happens is he gets home and he starts planning his golf outings and everything else because what has he done? He's already gotten 3/4 of his quota done for the week. So he kind of looks at how he takes off the rest of the days of the week because all he needs is 1 more sale. And that night he goes to bed at night and he falls out of bed. And he knocks his head and all does all this kind of thing. And when he finally comes to, he wakes up in a house that's really his house 10 years from now. So he's looking down the road 10 years. Okay, so it's almost like a story that's told about what your life is going to be like 10 years from now. And he's living in Eric Branton's house 10 years from now. But the problem is there's another Eric Branton there. And that's what's so intriguing. So there are 2 of them. There's this guy who just fell forward to the future, and then there's Eric Branton in the future. So first of all, they go through this whole thing about even recognizing each other, that they acknowledge, and the guy in the future is so cool about it. He just says the Eric knows everything about his past because they're one and the same person. They're just 10 years apart. And they, you know, so they have that kind of thing that they go through, and it was just neat to see this interaction, to see what his life was going to be like. But the problem is that they go back and start talking about things that happened in their life. And the Eric of the future is a multimillionaire, writes books about failing forward, all this kind of stuff. And the Eric in today's time is like going, well, that's not, doesn't look like my mental state, so where did we go wrong? So they started comparing their past, their lives, you know, pre the 10-year difference. And their lives were absolutely identical up to a certain point. So it's as if I kind of looked at this and I said, it's kind of like that fork in the road where you have a choice to go one way or another way, but we don't get the benefit of seeing the results that we're going to create by taking both sides of the path. We just have to make a choice on which side to take, right? So we step into one direction or the other, but we never get to fall into the future 10 years from now to see what the results we'd create if we did this way instead of this way. But again, a lot of things in life aren't so clear that we don't even recognize that they're perhaps forks in the road. We don't even see them as dynamics that could totally change our life. And that's what happened with this story. Eric Branton, what happened in Eric Branton's life, which one Eric Branton took one way, the other one went another, was something that was almost unsuspecting to him. And the story about so it's kind of like a story about choices we make that can lead our lives in 2 totally opposite directions. And Eric had a chance to learn and grow from a man in his life, but he chose one way, and his twin or his future partner that 10 years down the road chose the other. Same person, two separate paths. What was the event? The event that happened in their lives was a district manager at a company when they were selling in a clothing industry. This is before he went into the copier, leasing copiers. So this was a job before the one he currently had. And they were in this clothing business, and a district manager came one day, and Eric wanted to impress them. A new customer walked in and wanted to buy a whole wardrobe. So Eric proceeded to sell him the biggest sale he'd ever had, and it happened right smack in front of the district manager. And so he was exhilarated by this. And afterwards, the district manager said, "Well, nice sale, Eric. I'm just curious, what did the customer say no to?" And, of course, Eric sat back and thought, "My God, I just had an $1,100 sale. What do you mean, what did he say no to? I mean, he bought all these clothes. Eric didn't get it. Like, what do you mean, what did he say no to?" The DC respondent say, "Well, if he didn't say no to anything, how did you know he was done? In other words, how did the sale end if he didn't say no to anything?" And what the reality was here is the customer hadn't ended the sale. Eric had ended the sale. He sold the guy $1,100, and he was so excited about what he sold him, he ended the sale. And that was a gigantic aha that you could either take as an aha moment or you could take not as an aha moment. The major point that the district manager said, DM, their district manager said, was that the salesperson never decides when the sale is over. The customer does. And he said, "Eric, your fear of hearing the word no is the only thing standing between you and greatness." Now, what happened, that was the point of difference in these two men's lives. Even though they're exact same man, that was the point, the fork in the road. One of them looked at that and said, "Oh my gosh, my entire life and the greatness within me is tied to just two letters, N-O. And the other, Eric, said, "You know, this doesn't make any sense. What do you mean it stands between me and greatness?" And he just continued along because, you know what, he had to be right, or he had belief systems block him in. He wasn't open to be grieving, growing, and learning. He was stuck in his path. He thought he knew better. But the 10-year and future Eric, of course, left that day realizing he was just two letters away from greatness, N-O. That's all it was going to take in his life. So in reality, you had the same guy have one experience, and he got the chance to say, "What if I would have taken this guy's commentary seriously and done something about it?" That's what my 10-year in the future Eric did, and he's a multimillionaire today. So the rest of the book now focuses on, now that he's in the future with his potential, what he could have potentially be in 10 years, he spent the rest of the book is now his short-term education while he's visiting his 10-year future, you know, self. And so we go through some of the learning experiences he has with his 10-year future self. One of them is looking at models of failure. There's a right model of failure and a wrong one. And this is fascinating to me because this is kind of how I looked at it. A lot of us look at, here I am in life. Success is on one side, failure on the other. I'm going to do whatever it takes to move towards success, right? That's how we look at our lives. Here's my success path. Here's my goals. I'm going to head towards them and avoid failure at all costs. Well, the problem with it is that model of failure is totally wrong. It's something we probably lived, grew up with, had in our mind, maybe still have in our mind. And the problem with that whole model is that we feel like we have to move away from failure in order to reach success, and that's exactly wrong. The right model of failure is that failure is the halfway mark on the way to success. So it's not a destination to be avoided, but it's a destination to what? To embrace, because it's part of our process of achieving success is going to be to embrace failure. Now, people don't like the word failure. They don't like the word mistake. They try to avoid it. They try to, you know, especially people sitting in that analyst quadrant, that's the last thing they ever want to do. So they avoid risk-taking. They don't go out and take challenges because, boy, it's you know, we don't want to take risks. We don't want to step out. We might get burned. We might get hurt. We might suffer a mistake. So we get all caught up in this word. We are so overly sensitized to the word failure or mistake that we, oh my gosh, it's like the worst thing in the world to mention. And we avoid it like the plague. Successful people acknowledge that they need to go through failure in order to get to success. And I will share with you, I remember my first major failure in my life. I was one of these people that, you know, you talk about people that everything they touch turns to gold, and I kind of had that Midas touch as I was moving along in my life. I mean, my career, my legal career took off. I was flying all over the world. My second year of practicing law, I was vice president, general counsel of a multi-billion-dollar company at the age of 28. You couldn't talk about it much more than that. But one of my first, and I'm talking about business failures, I already had a personal failure in a marriage that didn't work because my focus wasn't about the marriage. My focus was somewhere else. So, you know, I could always point my finger at a cheating spouse, but really the reality is who created the cheating spouse. So I couldn't point my finger and blame him when in reality, where was my focus in my life? So the idea that I was working my business career and I had all this success and I ended up, you know, buying a company in Texas. The company went into bankruptcy. We pulled it back out, and we had a labor strike that destroyed our trucks, and the company went under. I had to dissolve the company. Now, I'm going to tell you, at the ripe age, I think I was, early 30s. I was in my early 30s at the time, and I really thought the world was at an end. I mean, everything I'd ever touched turned to gold, and all of a sudden I had a disaster on my hands. And I did the liquidation of the company. I totally paid off the bank. I got the secured creditors got 100 cents on a dollar. In fact, they were so ecstatic about the work I did to liquidate the company on their behalf that they tried to hire me to be in their liquidation department. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. That's the most depressing, you know, tearing something apart. It's one of the most depressing things in the world. Even though you can rationalize, well, but I'm making the best of liquidating something, I knew in my heart of hearts, Mary Jo Hilliker cannot be part of liquidating things. I had to be part of building something. That was my nature, my positive nature. But the idea was that it was very difficult for me because, you know, I avoided failure like all my life. And I'll never forget one of my uncles calling me in the midst of this closing down the company. One of my uncles called me up, talked to me on the phone, and he was so terrific. He said to me, he goes, Mary Jo, this is just one step in your life. He says, you are going to become greater because of it. And I'll never forget that. It was just so awesome for somebody to step in my life to tell me in a time where I'm totally devastated that because of this failure, I'm going to become greater in my life. And sure enough, that is what helped catapult me forward into understanding on that path that failures or mistakes are going to happen in our life. We don't go out in search of them, but we don't live a life of fear or live a life of you know, avoidance and non-risk taking because of it might not work. And so that's really what he's talking about here. The model is that failure is our pathway to total success. If you don't, we're going to stumble, we're going to fall. We need to desensitize ourselves to that concept of failure. It's the same thing as the word no. And this is where it draws into the connection with the, you know, title of the book, that we tend to have the same viewpoint as of no's. A lot of us in network marketing, we don't approach people, and we'll talk about a certain group of people, but we don't approach people because we're afraid of no. We don't follow up with people because we're afraid they're going to say no. We don't do this because we're afraid of rejection. We don't want to talk to people at our church because we're afraid of rejection. We even had, I'll tell you, in a call I had this morning with one of my coaching calls, we talked about a woman in my downline. Her entire history was, you know, she had a prior history in politics and in education. And all of a sudden, she gets in network marketing. And after being away for a weekend in a political sphere, she reunited with all these people in her past. And the most fascinating part of this conversation was that even though everybody is ecstatic to see her and she made reconnected with them all, she realized that when she had drafted up her list of people, the potential prospects, she never put them down on a piece of paper because there was some kind of concept in her head about intimidation, and so they never even came to her mind as people she could approach with Banatech. Isn't that wild? So, and I think it's so perfect for this kind of talk because it's all about we avoid people. We avoid potentially bringing the best possible people we could get in our business into our business because of our fear of no or our fear of rejection. So we've got to get over that because that's what it's about. With me, it's rejection. I have to go through rejection and no's on my way to success. It's automatic. It's going to happen. And so I need to get the sting and I need to be desensitized to the fact that people are going to say no. And that a lot of times you hear this in network marketing and you talk to people and they say, well, I'm looking for no's because I know if I go through so many no's, I'm going to get a yes. And that's a great thing. It's not that we celebrate with no's necessarily, but they're there and we recognize the reality, they're going to happen. So we have to, and if we look back as children, what happened to us as children? I mean, can you relate back to when you were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years old? And you go, Mommy, Mommy, can I have this? No. Well, Mommy, can I have this? No. How many times do we ask? And just because she said no to one thing, did that stop us from asking for 100 other things? Never. Some of you today can look at your kids or grandkids and you can say, oh, my gosh, that's exactly how they are. They come after you like torpedoes. Man, they're like that busy bee. They never give up. They come back to hit you one more time, one more time. We had that perseverance. We had that natural sense of total, you know, I never give up attitude. But somewhere in our lives, that changed. We didn't have a fear of no as a little child. It was just a part of life. And we were totally desensitized to it. So the idea is, there, we need to go back and find that in our life. We need to find how we can get in a position where we can desensitize ourselves to the no's again, because it's not going to help us and serve us if we continue to be, you know, overly sensitive to no's. Okay? So that was a great aha moment, the models of failure. Great thing for all of us to know. Next, we talked about the same event, totally changed one man's life. We talked about that. And one of the things he brought out was, and we've heard these statistics before in network marketing, that only 5% of the population will be able to retire without assistance. In other words, 95% of our population, or well, 36% by the age of 65 are dead. And then the rest of us are going to be in a position where we have to rely on family, get jobs, rely on social programs, because we're not going to be financially in a position to take care of ourselves. And who do you think gets to be into that lucky 5%? Those who fail the most in their lifetime. Isn't that an amazing statistic? People who fail the most are the ones that succeed the greatest. So it's a concept of starting to look at failure in that light and understanding that, hey, you know, I want to go out there and fail today. You know? Yeah, because if I go out there and I get enough no's, I'm gonna succeed at this, because that means that I'm coming up against more and more people. I'm coming across more and more people. I'm approaching more and more people. So failing and becoming a failure are really two distinct things. So make sure that you don't say becoming a failure. Failing is an activity that happens in the moment, where becoming a failure is a conscious state where you start viewing yourself. So I might fail with somebody and not get them signed up, but I'm not a failure because I'm not taking that on as a conscious state. I understand that that's part of my process on my way to success. And you can see in this story how one Eric went home, changed his attitude. Okay, he understood this no process, and he started to go out and pursue no's and really hammer that and get as many no's as possible. And he became the salesman of the year, and the other Eric ended up losing his job. He lost his job at the clothing company. That's why he was now leasing copy machines, because he lost his job. It's the difference between, I put this quote in the outline, it's the difference between massive success and mediocre performance. And when we look at that, we start looking at our lives and looking at our Manatech business. Are we doing massive success or mediocre performance? What are we choosing here? Huge thing to look at. Because I don't know that I go out and pursue no's, but I'm changing my approach to my Manatech business after reading this book, because I really get this. It really hit me hard. It's kind of like right between the eyes about how many people am I talking to a day, how many people am I approaching, how many new people, and am I really willing to take on the world and get lots of no's. After reading this book, my gosh, I want tons of no's. some people stumble over the truth, they pick themselves up and go on their merry way as if nothing has happened at all. And that's exactly what this Eric did. He came across this truth. He had a district manager kind of lay it out for him. How did the sale end if the person never said no? You didn't pursue the no. You didn't keep going after it until you got the no. And he said, you know, that was the truth. So it's the concept is that the word no is just the only thing standing between you and greatness. And one Eric said, just blew it off. There was a truth for him to be able to take out and go, what an aha moment. But he chose not to, and he just kept stumbling forward. Which one are you? Good question. The next part of the book, Eric, again, in the future now with his twin, it reads the book, Fail Your Way to Success. Guess who wrote that book? His twin did. And that was part of the process of him becoming a millionaire. After he understood this philosophy and he implemented it in his life and he saw the tremendous success he had, he wrote the book, Fail Your Way to Success. And five failure levels, I attached a sheet on the five failure levels, and you can review that. We actually cover it in the rest of the chapters. But there are five failure levels, and you can see what level you are at on level 1 through 5. How far have you progressed? Maybe even take that sheet and copy it and post it on your wall and start circling and even recording, getting close from one level to the next level for yourself. I think it's a neat thing to do to just say, hey, I'm going to apply this philosophy and principle in my life in the next 6 months in my Manatech business and see if it makes a difference. Because what's wrong, people, is if we keep doing what we've always been doing, we're going to create the same results. So that means we need to try something different. And this is a terrific book to get you kicked off in a direction to try something different. So it's about pursuit of failure. Do something every day that scares you. In other words, get out of your comfort zone. It's kind of like Susan Jeffers' book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. I love that book as well. It's about we all are going to have fears in our life if we're all willing to change. And if you're not willing to change, well, welcome to leading a life of mediocrity or meandering generality. Change is what's going to create differences in our life. We need to step out and say, what am I going to do differently? How am I going to change? Well, I'm willing to grow as a person, become a better leader, become a better manager, become a better spouse, become a better parent. All these things we should be striving for every day, and it's called change. And that sometimes causes fear because it's something different. It's an unknown. But the idea is that you want to change, you want to step into change, and with change becomes fear. But courage isn't the concept of absence of fear. Courage is that it's taking action in the face of fear present in our lives. So very critical for us to get that. It was not the intriguing thing, the lesson that he was taught here, the future Eric, the twin in the 10 years in the future, who took on this lesson, it was not the willingness to hear no that got him on the right track. It was the wantingness to fail. There's a big distinction, and you'll find that in those five levels of failure. It wasn't the willingness to hear no, but the wantingness to fail. It's the idea that why can't we make, you know, a rejection become amusing instead of a downer? Well, for us in Manatech, it's a little bit of a downer because we realize the critical importance of these products in people's lives. And we know that if they don't land on these products, you know, what is the likelihood that they are going to have as successful a wellness program as if they did take the products? So we know that it's going to impact their lives. So that's somehow for us in Manatech, as I looked at this whole issue, I said, well, it's a little different for us because we really want to help a person have greater wellness. But we also want to honor the person to have a choice. I mean, they can have choice, and we need to honor their choice. So I think we need to start looking at rejection and allowing it to be something that's more fun than what we've put behind it in the past. You could actually use it as a celebration that I got through one more person today. But I'm not sure I'm at that level yet, but I sure am going to set goals around those because I think it really is going to get me to go out and do more prospecting, which is what's holding all of us back, all of us. So it's a wantingness of failure. We cannot control other people's behavior, but we can control our own reaction. So when somebody gives a no, we can control our response to it. I remember when I first started in Manatech, my response was, man, that person has no clue what Ambertus is about, because, and they don't sure clearly have a need for it because their brain's not functioning. That's what I would say, not to their face, but to myself. That's how I reacted to no's, that their brain isn't functioning right. They need desperately need Ambritose because they can't even see how much they need it, you know. So it's a kind of a catch-22. You need Ambritose to see how much you need Ambritose, but if you don't have Ambritose, you can't see the need to have Ambritose. You get that little cycle. But it was kind of funny. But it was a way for us to be able to handle no's. Look at how Mary Jo inherently came to that conclusion. Early on, my first month in Manitowoc, I came up with that idea. Because I knew that inherently inside of me, I knew that if I didn't counteract the no side of the syndrome, I could get caught up with the negativity and allow it to keep me stuck. And some of you are there, and that's why you desperately need to make that move. You can't allow the rejection or no's to ever impact your life because it's not about you. It's about them. You can't control another person's behavior, but you can control your reaction to it. So instead of spending our time avoiding rejection, in other words, some of the people out there, they say, follow-up's my worst thing. I said, what do you mean follow-up's your worst thing? You spend money buying materials, you spend money, and you get out of your comfort zone to talk to new people, and you get them all these materials, and you don't follow up. I said, what is that all about? Well, the number one thing I found when I dealt with people in a coaching environment around poor follow-up was the fear of rejection. Can you imagine? So our idea isn't to look to avoid rejection. Our idea is to go out and find it. Go for the notes. And that's what this book is about. Go after it. Go after it and after it and after it. A super salesman in the book had a license plate. It said N, and then I left a space there because I couldn't put, but what he had in there was a heart. So it had N, heart, with no. So what that license plate said was in love with no. In love with no. Isn't that great? That's what he had on his license plate. And he was the best salesman in the company. In love with no's. That's what he had on his license plate. So set your weekly goals on how many no's you'll get. The difference would be for you, you're never going to interfere with momentum. Let's go back to Eric, okay? Remember Eric? What did I start off the outline? And the book starts out with him. The first thing in the first chapter in the book is about Eric went on three sales calls on Monday, and he got three leases signed on copiers. Well, his quota was only four. So what he did, he started masterminding what he was going to do with the rest of his week. He only needed one more. So he was going to go golfing, and he was going to do this, and he was going to do and see what happened to poor Eric, because he had his whole goal set on successes instead of on no's, is he lost the total momentum he had built in his business. What if he could have gotten those three yeses, three out of three, and he said, but wait a minute, I said this week I'm going to get 25 no's. That would get him, the Tuesday morning he would have gotten out of bed, went back in the field immediately to call on more people because, man, he had to get those 25 no's. So it would build his momentum. Sometimes we have a success. We sign up a new all-star, and we get so taken back with that we stop doing what? Filling up our hoppers with people. That's your number one way of destroying your business. But we do that. I see people do that all the time. They get so excited about a person, and then they go, I'm just going to spend time with this gal. I'm going to train. I said, you can't train her 8 hours a day. She's not going to let you do that. She's not giving you 8 hours. Oh, but I have to get ready to train her. I have to get And then we get all caught up in stuff because it's a comfort zone. Prospecting is outside our comfort zone. So what do we want to do? We rather train and putz around with people instead of do what really makes this business go. Wow. If you had to get 25 no's this week, what would your life look different? I guarantee your life would look different. So try it. Do it for 3 months. See what it looks like. But that's what he's talking about here. It's really clear. If we set our concept on going after no's, you know, then all of a sudden our momentum will continue to go and grow and grow and grow. And Ben Franklin quote I put in here, success has ruined many a man. You have a little bit of success and guess what? I think this is one of the reasons why a lot of people get to presidential and they no longer qualify. They're gone in the next 3 months or 4 months because success ruins them. It's one of the reasons Manitowoc put out that whole idea of platinum about 5 years ago, because they found that some of their top prospecting people, their top go-getters in this company, who are, you know, presidentials, were kind of retiring. So they decided, what do we need to do? Give them more motivation. Let's put a platinum out there. See if it doesn't motivate them. If there's more money in, do we dangle something out there that might motivate them? We get these guys back in the field working hard again. Success has ruined many a man. And the number one salesman in the company for this future, Eric, was the guy who was the one who got the most no's. So the most empowering word in the world is not yes. Hearing yes is the easy part of the job and teaches you virtually nothing. But learning to hear no over and over again and to never quit, persevere, now that builds character and self-esteem. That is what is empowering. If you take that one quote out of that outline and post it somewhere, it will change your life. Yes is not the most empowering word. It teaches you virtually nothing. But learning to hear no over and over again and to never quit, now that builds character and self-esteem. That's empowering. Terrific. Setting no goals. I even gave you a little sheet on here that came out of the book, The Science of Setting No Goals. You can follow that and you can just figure out how many people. You look at your own records. I mean, how many people do you talk to? If you talk to 10 people, do you sign up one or two or none, or how many does it take? Well, if you want to sign up two people this week and every week, that means, and you sign up one for every 10, you need to get 18 no's every week. So your goal becomes 18 no's, or just round it up to 20. So you're going to get 20 no's this week. So your goal is to go out and get 20 no's. So start working on it, people, right? Set your goal to get no's, no goals, okay? The failure quotient. This was fascinating to me. And he's talked about the failure quotient. What is the failure quotient? The failure quotient is how much is a person willing to fail before they succeed. In other words, how much are you willing to fail at something before you succeed? When you watch some of your people in your downline get, sign up, they're on fire, and they quit 3 months later, what is their failure quotient? Really low. Really low. And this is a statistic. What is it? 80% of the people that join network marketing quit after their first 6 months or not 12 months? 80%. That's a very low failure quotient. Very low. How much is a person willing to fail before they succeed? That's your failure quotient. How high a person's failure quotient is, perhaps the number one way to measure whether they're going to settle for crumbs or achieve everything they want in life. Isn't that incredible? How high is your failure quotient? Now, some of you on this call are going, well, Joe, I've been a man for 8 years, and I've failed over and over and over again. And I go, well, that's a different story. It's time to do something different. Maybe you're in Mantech, but you're not really doing the business. You're trying to do the business, but you're not really doing the business. You're not really changing your habits, changing your emphasis, and taking a new path. You're trying different systems that come up and try to see if they work or this works or that work. But are you really disciplined, putting in habits in place? Are you reading your goals? Are you doing the 12 daily dozen? Are you doing all these things every single day? You got to give systems time to work, and you have to be totally disciplined at doing the system. Otherwise, it's not going to work for you. Are you having a hard time closing people? Do you go out and get a mentor or coach to help you close? Are you bringing people to every meeting you have in your area? Or are you just showing up because you love Manatech so much you want to go and support them no matter what's going on in your business life? Don't sell yourself short. Build a business that you want, the business of your dreams. Create that. It's there for the taking, but you got to choose into it. When looking at people who failed, he just took a few names, Abraham Lincoln, R.H. Mason, Harlan Sanders with KFC, Edison and the light bulb. All of these are just a few stories of massive failure in people's lives before they finally led to unbridled success. Babe Ruth even had 714 home runs. He was the home run hitter. He held the record for years and years until Hank Aaron took over, right? And he held his record for years and years, but no one ever talks about his 1,330 strikeouts. They didn't talk about how he led the league in strikeouts. They talked about what? So how many times did he fail? You know, he got to get a home run. He had to get at least two strikeouts basically to get one home run. So, but that's life. Napoleon Hill, this is my own thought as I was reviewing the book. Napoleon Hill went out and he researched all the successful people in the world. Remember, he did that He was Carnegie is the guy who contracted with him to go out and spend 15 years of his life researching what makes people successful, what's the most important factor. And he found out it had nothing to do with education, upbringing, background. He went on and on and on. It had all to do with one major factor, and that was they believed they would succeed. Well, what do you suspect these people's failure quotients were? Their failure quotients were off the charts. It didn't matter how many times they failed because they would pick themselves up and get back going again because they, what? They believed they would succeed. Huge. So I think it kind of says the same thing. People have that undying belief that success is at their fingertips and they're going to succeed no matter what. Have an incredible high failure quotient. So, and then let's look, he brought in the analogy of the doctors. If you look at doctors, what they learn in med school, you know, in med school they learn that, you know, they're going to lose patients. They have to be able to understand that, because if every single time a doctor lost a patient, he went into the doldrums and maybe quit, we wouldn't have any doctors in this. So they teach them the word next. I loved it. I found a book. Yahoo! My favorite word, next. You guys have heard this on my calls for years, and I finally found a book that had my favorite word. Okay? It says that's what they teach in, of course, I think Kalinch's book had that word next, too. Some will, some won't, so what? Next. Yeah. But my favorite word has always been next. Think negative, hey, things happen in my life, I evaluate them, I learn from them, and I go next. I don't carry it one inch forward. Why? Because it would eat me alive if I did. I don't like things I do in the past to eat me alive, because all they can do is ruin my future. They can't, you know, make my future brighter. I've already learned my lesson from it. Move on, right? So learn the word next. Comfort zone. It's never static. It's either growing or shrinking. So if you give in to fears in one area of your life, it will only be a matter of time before it becomes easier to avoid other challenges as well. That's a great quote out of the book. I think the impact of that is we have to look at other areas of our life. Where are we giving in to fears in our life? What areas? And you know that once you start allowing that to creep in and you're giving into it, so you're avoiding, you know, taking risks or challenges, it's going to soon eat up other areas of your life. It'll seep into other areas because it'll become a behavioral issue for you. So you want to fight that behavioral pattern. He talked about the Pike syndrome, and some of you are familiar with this, with the fleas in a jar or all these kind of things. Put a bunch of fleas in a jar, you put a cover on it, and the fleas try to get out, and they jump and pop up against the top of the jar, and you do that for a few hours, and then you take the cover off the jar. What happens to the fleas? They keep jumping up and down the same level they did before because they've built in their lives, in their little flea life, the concept that that's as high as they can go. It's a self-imposed restriction. And Pike's the same thing. He said he took a tank of water and put glass in the middle of it. It's kept, so there are two compartments. And in one side, he put a ton of minnows. The other side, he put a pike. That pike kept bouncing up against that glass wall because it wanted to eat. And it kept hitting that glass, trying to get to those minnows, and it couldn't do it. So finally, they came back in, and they busted out the glass in between. And guess what? The pike never went across to the other side of the tank. Again, what did it do? He called it the Pike syndrome. The pike had conditioned itself through hours of nose bumping to stay within its own self-imposed limitations. How do we do that? All the time. When people look at me and I say, what do you, and you go, I can't do that. What is that? The minute somebody says, I can't do that, what is it? It's a self-imposed limitation. When somebody looks at you and goes, well, I can't sell, self-imposed limitation. It's the Pike syndrome. It's kind of why I preach about come from possibilities, not probabilities. Live your life from is it possible? You go, well, it's not probable, Mary Jo, because in my past, and I go, oh, let me throw up. If everything in your past dictated how you'd be in the future, then you have no chance in life of ever being successful, because it would all be based on what your past you did. You're not tied to your past. You learn from it, you grow forward. It's called the Pike syndrome, self-imposed limitations. And somebody asked the question, well, do these strategies work for average people? The strategy of go for no's and all the things I'm talking about today? Absolutely. He said yes, because anyone who adopts the strategies, after a while, they stop being average. It's what gets you out of being average. You don't have to have an intellect. You know. And he even, there's a chapter in there about skill being highly overrated. He said, studies show that as many as 80% of salespeople don't make it in their first year for the simple reason that they fail to make enough contacts. Sorry, we left a word out of there. They don't make enough prospecting calls. They don't talk to enough people. So 80% of people, because they don't prospect enough, fail in sales in their first year. You can spend hours at training seminars, but it's the motivated person who just gets in front of people enough people that tells their story to become the best salespeople. So those of you who like to go to trainings all the time, how many of you go to every single training that comes out? And you're collecting all the data and collecting all the books, and you know what you're not doing? You're not stepping out and taking action. I have people like that in my downline that have been in Magic for 5 years. Finally, this is the first year they're starting to step out, and it's exhilarating to watch them. I'm so excited, tears come to my eyes. But as I said, for 5 years they got stuck in this pattern of behavior because it was their comfort zone. Training, training, training. I want as much education as possible. Learn, 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 learn. But they never stepped out. They wouldn't do the tough things. They couldn't even conceptualize having 5 meetings in 1 week. That would just scare them to death. Still does. But they're doing it. They're feeling the fear and they're doing it anyway because they realize one thing, that that's the only way they're going to make this business work. Feel the fear and do it anyway. So skill is highly overrated. They used an example. Well, this was a fun one. In there, they had an example of an insurance company that was failing miserably. And one of the main reasons it was failing was because of what? Because the people weren't getting enough contacts. They weren't going out and presenting. They weren't doing their presentation to enough people. So they hired a guru to come in and give them all this advice about how to do this and that they weren't doing it. And this is one of the reasons they were failing. They needed to get people out in front of more customers. And so you know what the management did? They threw out the consultants. And they said, okay, this is what we're doing. Every single one of our agents, we're going to put you in an area where you have no connectiveness, no leads, no warm leads, nothing. And you're going to knock on doors. And we're going to give you the worst possible thing to say to somebody in terms of a sales pitch. You're going to say, you don't want to buy any life insurance, do you? Notice how that right away implies or suggests that they don't want to do it. It's probably the worst possible thing you could say to somebody. And they said, and we want you to knock on the door and say, hi, introduce yourself and say, you don't want to buy life insurance, do you? And say that. And they had these people go out there. Well, because their pitch was only, hi, my name's Sarah, nice to meet you. You don't want to buy any life insurance, do you? It was so quick that they found that their salespeople were able to visit 60 homes a day because it was that quick. But they also found that if you knocked on 60 doors a day, you would get one person who would look at you and go, well, yeah, I happen to be looking for a life insurance. Come on in. Let's talk. One out of 60 would say yes. So they were signing up one out of 60. But every single agent was doing this every day, and their business took off, and the company just exploded. So what does that tell you? Even with the worst possible languaging, if you talk to enough people, you're going to be successful. You're going to be successful. But it's about ratio of people. We need to go out there and talk to people. The next chapter in the book was really fascinating, even more, and something that I believe in, and I do with my Christmas letters, Thanksgiving stuff, and whatever. But the concept here is that the statistics show we should never, you know, it's not about that the word no doesn't mean I'm never going to do it. It just means just not yet. Statistics show that 44% of us give up after one no. In other words, somebody tells us no and we give up. You want to throw their name away, cross their name off of your warm list. Remember, what did I tell you about, what are the only two ways you can cross somebody off your prospecting list or warm list? Number one, they die. Or number two, they say yes and they sign up. Otherwise, they never get removed from your warm list. Remember, that's Mary Jo's philosophy. That's what you ought to be doing. If you're doing the MJ Durkin routine, you're carrying around that list in your pocket, you better transcribe it sometime because soon it's going to go through the laundry and you're going to lose it. So put it on, you know, a sheet in the computer. Keep track of it that way as well. But 44% of us give up after one no. We get a no from somebody, we move on. 22% of us give up after two no's. 14% give up after three no's. And 12% give up after four no's. So if you total all those statistics, you're going to find out that 92% of the salespeople give up after four tries. They'll go back and bite at the apple up to four times, but 92% of us, we're done. But the statistics show that 60% of all customers say no four times before they say yes. Isn't that crazy? That is crazy. Here we are giving up before we even statistically in the probability of having success. That is crazy. Do you understand these statistics, people? Take number 11 and cut that out of the outline and put it on your wall. Now go back and look at all the people that said no to you and go back and do the next three times. You want to be, if you said they said no once, you need four more times. You don't have to do a full presentation with them. You just go back and touch them one more way, whether it's a Christmas letter, it's an invitation, it's a phone call, whatever it is. If they haven't said no five times, they haven't said no enough. So the quickest way for you to separate you from the rest of the pack is just go back and make sure you're getting five no's from everybody that says no to you. There's a story about selling airbags to airlines, so I don't have time to get into it. Let me finish off the rest of it, but it's a great one because it's the same concept. It took the guy 20 years. The guy that came up with airbags, not to airlines, to cars. A guy who came up with the airbag concept went to the automobile industry, and they said they threw him out over and over and over again. Then he went to the federal government. And, you know, it took 20 years before they finally made it mandatory to put airbags in cars. And the guy made $120 million. So you can look at it as he made, for every no, every year he got no, he made $4, $5, $6 million, right? So $6 million each year for collecting no's. But he persevered for 20 years. But he made $6 million a year because his payday came at $120 million 20 years later. Okay, go after your chicken list. This is the idea about making sure that you're going after those. Remember I talked about the person that didn't put down her political context or educational context. And, you know, same thing with us. We have people that are on our chicken list. They're people that would never go on. He says in the book, go after your biggest ones first. Just because you don't want a no from a big enchilada, go after the big enchiladas. A no is a no, so go after the biggest ones you can. Fail exponentially. Get your entire organization to fail. In other words, go off from today's call, understanding this material, which is overwhelming. Some of you, it was incredible to me. It was a lot of things I didn't realize. But what you want to do is you want to get your organization to go out after no's. So set up your people for success. Say, this week you're going to get 20 no's. 20 no's. It's so effective. Edison did not, and when you talk about exponentially, why do you want your team involved in this as well? Because you'll even be more successful exponentially. Edison didn't fail 100 times by himself. He brought in a whole cadre of different science people that he brought in to help fail with him. And, of course, his quote, famous quote is, I haven't failed 10,000 times. I just found 10,000 ways that it wouldn't work. He didn't fail to. He just found 10,000 ways it didn't work. And then the last thing he put in the book was about rewarding people for their failures. They had go for no pins. Yes is the destination. No is how you get there. Isn't that great? That's another great quote for the book. So if you're still challenging yourself until the day you die, like this book is saying, challenge yourself till the day you die. Go after no's. Challenge yourself. Keep growing. If you're challenging yourself to the day you die, rest assured the last thing you do before you die will probably be to fail at something. The only way for you to experience your successes for the rest of your life is to continue risking, taking chances, and showing outrageous courage. So just do it. Okay, people, that's it. Great book. Did you enjoy it? Anyone have any feedback, comments?
Really good, Mary Jo.
Yeah, just open a can of worms.
Good. Yeah, kind of like it's between the head with the hammer.
Yeah.
Like a hammer hits you up between the eyes. It's like, yep, that's it.
That's it. All right, great.
That's good.
Great.
Mary Jo, hi, it's Ann. I'm a very positive, motivated person, but you telling me that usually four people say no before they sign has re-motivated me now to keep going after those no's.
Yay!
And to work with these people in my downline that are already knows that if they get no one time, that's it. So, boy, you've given me some good material today.
There you go. Go after them, sister. You got it. You got it. That's
Mary,
great.
Mary, this is a great call, but you know what occurred to me halfway through or partway through is if we were handing out Rolls Royces, we're knocking on doors, and people would say no, we certainly would not take it personally. We would shake our head and go on to the next door.
Exactly.
You know, here's a free Rolls Royce, and they say no. I would say, oh, no, it's me. I would say, oh, it's them, you know, and go on to the next. And I mean, wow. And this just applies to all kinds of areas in my life, I just have to tell you, other areas of my life. So thank you so much.
You bet. You bet. I know. It was just so impactful to me. I loved it. I loved it. This book was terrific. Yeah. Anyone else? And I love the idea of looking at Rolls-Royces, because you know what? A lot of those same people that say no to Manitech are the same ones, if you went and offered them a free Rolls-Royce, they would say no to you, because they're stuck. They're just darn stuck. They can't even say the word yes. They would look at you like they didn't trust you, and they'd close the door. Yeah. We live in a funny world. Yep. Anyone else before we go?
True, true.
All right, everybody, have a great week. Go for nose. Go out, see if you know, I'm telling you, these are great ideas and concepts to build in your business if you just go out and you try it. And that doesn't mean try it today. It means put it in place and implement this in your life for the next 4 weeks or 8 weeks or 12 weeks, whatever. Take a long time of period, but make sure you're going out there and getting those nose and see what happens to your business. I'm telling you, these are truths, and these are just really effective ways of looking at how to grow your business effectively. Go out and go after them. All right, love you all. Have a great week, and we'll talk next Monday.